We are all worthy of love, kindness, and respect for who we are, right now in this very moment. Some things will always be out of our control. Some things will always change, yet all of us have power, and all of us can feel empowered to navigate life's ups and downs with grace. When you open your heart and mind, everything is possible.
Must be the most beautiful day I've ever lived.
Join Alana Sheeran as she and her guests help you create your magical life with big ideas and practical tools, concrete actions, and potentially life-changing concepts. Magic is on its way. Now, here's Alana.
Hi, welcome to Create Your Magical Life. So I saw a question on social media this week that I think is worth talking about here. It's a question that a lot of people have. Someone wrote, I understand and believe in positive thinking and law of attraction and that the universe has our back, but how do you explain when tragedies happen? Ugh, what a question, right? How many of us have asked this? So I don't have all the answers. And I'm not going to ask you to believe everything I say, but I do want you to listen with an open mind and an open heart. Now, we have a lot of control over our lives and over creating the life that we dream of by using our thoughts, our feelings, our words, and our actions and reactions. But there are some things that are just too big. They're out of our control. Now, what I believe and what many people believe is that our souls come back lifetime after lifetime to learn lessons, to heal, to grow. And before we come back, there are certain contracts or agreements that are made with other souls to help us do what we need to do in this lifetime. That is often what these tragedies are. And so often there is a silver lining in them that we may not see until many, many years later. And honestly, we may never see them, but they're there on a soul level, on a karmic level. I'll give you a quick example. In July 2010, my son Benjamin was stillborn. Now, I'd had a difficult pregnancy with him, and I'd learned a lot about positive thinking and beliefs and how those can impact our physical bodies. And when he died, I struggled a little bit with the judgment of, what did I do wrong? Did I not believe enough? Did I not think positively enough? Because that is what, if you follow law of attraction, that's one of the things that can happen, is that we can blame ourselves for the bad things that happen in our lives. But that wasn't helping me grieve at all. And a couple of months after he died, I went to a lecture that was run by a reputable channel in our area. And I asked a question, and the information that came through was the following. I was told that in my last life, I had seen my children murdered, and I had grieved for 20 years, gotten sick and died. And that my son was a soul who had agreed to come back and touch life in order to help me heal that karmic grief. Well, I'll tell you that my mind could not handle this information. It was way too big, and I obviously have no conscious memories of any other lifetime. But on a physical level, almost a cellular level, I could feel myself relax. And what this information did was give me permission to stop blaming myself and to just grieve and to find the beauty and the gifts in my life. And I will tell you that my son's stillbirth was the turning point. And it's the reason that I do what I do today and that I am who I am.
So karma, the idea that past actions or events can impact our current life experiences, is clearly something worth understanding. Luckily, our guest today is an expert on understanding and healing karma. Kimberly Arana is one of those rare people who, as a child, actually remembered that she came from somewhere else before this life. That realization led to things like depression, anxiety, drug addiction, and then finally she was able to embrace her gifts after a near-death experience. Kimberly began training in a sacred mystic tradition, and she's been a practicing psychic medium and shamanic practitioner, among other things, for the last 20 years. Kimberly now helps her clients bust through their karmic blocks heal their karmic patterns for good. So if you've ever found yourself repeating the same kind of experience again and again, whether that's around money or love or friendships, you don't want to miss today's show. Keep listening. It's going to be so much fun. Thank you so much for being here, Kimberly. I'm thrilled to be talking with you.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Okay, so I want to start by defining some of the terms that we're using, because I think some people listening will understand and some, or will already know, and some, you know, we've all heard the term psychic, we've all heard the term medium, but what is the difference? So let's start there.
Yeah, that's a good place to start, because it can get a little convoluted, right? Because, for instance, a medium is psychic, ultimately.
Yes.
Because a psychic can tune into, right, the unseen, if you will, if we want to speak poetically about it. And yet there are differences, because a medium specifically engages with spirits.
Right.
So, and they may also be psychic and have other talents, for instance. But a psychic, if you're speaking specifically to a psychic and calling on them for those needs, they may be tuning into information that will help you, that will help you have insight into what you need to do, what may be coming around the bend, but they're not necessarily speaking to spirits.
Right.
So that's a simple distinction between them, really.
Okay. And just to be really specific, too, psychics get intuitive information in a number of different ways. We touched on this a little bit in a call a couple weeks ago with Megan Potter, but I just want to say it specifically here. Some people see things, which is clairvoyance. Some people hear things, which is clairaudience. Some people know things, which is claircognizance. Some people feel things, which is clairsentience. And a lot of people have a combination of those things. So what are your top, in your psychic work, what are your top ways of getting information?
The top ones, and it's so interesting because the way people use these terms changes and morphs over the years, right? So the top would be claircognizance and clairsentience, but then also all the other clairs. I'm kind of a mutt, and it seems like I joke about that because I love dogs. But it kind of happens however my guides, whatever they feel needs to be utilized most when I'm working with clients. So sometimes I'll have a client where it seems like with them, there's so much of the clairvoyant coming through all the time. Whereas with another, it's much more of the claircognizance, for instance, which I just call knowings.
Right.
But that would be the main way for me. I have a physical knowing throughout my entire body, a sensation that I experience. And then there's layers of information that come in with that.
Okay, great. And you mentioned guides. We're going to get into that in a little bit. And I want to be really clear, too, when you talk about mediums talking with spirits, that can be, those are often people who have died and either they're stuck in the earth plane as ghosts or they've crossed over and are spirits. And it can also be the sort of angelic realm, spirit realm, like we're going to talk about in a little bit with spirit guides and all that, right? Okay, so I want to, we've defined those terms. I want to talk a little, you talk a little bit, especially on your website, Unshakable Soul, about soul awareness and why that's important. Can you give us a quick sort of rundown on what you mean by soul awareness?
Well, soul awareness, yes, from my perspective, right, is about understanding that we are so much more than just the awareness of our ego. There is a whole other awareness that comes through, that comes from the presence of our soul. And the soul knows the story of why you're here. The soul has a reason of why it chose to manifest you in the first place, right? So it knows all about your real purpose. It knows all about the lessons, the support and challenges that you've created, or rather that it created for you in order to help it evolve and grow, right? So to me, knowing the soul awareness, the presence of what's coming through you from what I would call the other world, what I call the other side, some would call heaven or what have you, having that awareness coming through means that you are aware of your karmic patterns. You're aware of what your soul is working through and working with. You have much more awareness of the reasons why people are in your life or maybe not in your life, you know, how they can help you and how they cannot. So to me, in many ways, it's about understanding the role of your ego, because that's really first and foremost, because most of us operate completely from an egoic place.
And when you say ego, you mean our human personality.
Yes.
Yeah.
So like, really simplify it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So understanding that that is merely one facet of who you are, that that is just a tool that the soul utilizes in many ways, right? Mm-hmm. So when we can move beyond coming from the perspective of merely our ego, then we're moving into the realm of the place of the soul, the awareness of the soul and all its information that it has to share with us. And your life can become much more empowered because it's so much easier to navigate life when you truly understand why you're here and what's been set up in many ways for you, you know?
Right. Yes. Yeah. So the idea of soul contracts or soul agreements that we make before we come in for our healing, our learning, our growth, all of that.
Can I tell you a funny little analogy that I use?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I wrote these little vignettes of, thoughts that I had with conversations with guides and whatnot of what goes on, you know, and I always kind of imagined, you know, a soul has planned its whole life. It's got everything ready. It's set up the family that it needs or wants, and it's got the culture and the time it's going to be in, and it's all excited. And imagine it's about to jump out of the etheric plane, right, and dive into 3D reality, and it's ready to go. And then its senior guide comes forth and hands it a little envelope and says, "Here is your ego." And it opens up the card, and either it's going to go, "Oh, no, this is what I got for my ego," or it says, "Oh, yay, I love this kind of ego." And I joke about that because I think of the ego as kind of our wild card that the soul has to work with. They have to work together. And the problem is usually the ego just takes over, you know.
Right, right. Yeah. So, yeah, the personality that the soul is given could really help the process or hinder the process of growth.
Yeah.
That's funny. Sure. Yeah. It's like when you're, an actor working with another actor and you're like, "Oh, I have to pretend to love this person, but I really can't stand them."
Yeah. I could see that being challenging. It could be interesting.
Okay. So let's talk about karma then. Let's have you sort of define it. I mean, I mentioned earlier past actions are events impacting our current life experiences, but can you just define it a little bit more clearly for everyone?
Sure. Karma, the Sanskrit word for karma is action. So we can distill it down to something very, very simple, right? And as you know, people really run with all of what they think karma is. Mm-hmm. It's not something that's done to you, which is what we often all think of it as. This just happens to me, you know? Or I have bad karma and it happens to me everywhere I go. It's something that you generate. And when you see it from that perspective, you realize you actually have a lot more, I hate to use the word control, but you do have a sense of more control in terms of how you can work with your karma. Karma is not fate. A lot of people think of it that way, that it is your fate. And when we think of it that way, ego loves that because then we don't have to be responsible for our karma, right? Well, it's just fate. It just happens to me. Yeah. And this is where it's kind of that... The paradox where it's challenging is what your ego is dealing with is your soul's karmic patterns. So it can feel like it's happening to you, especially if maybe you've got something in negative karma that you're working through, right? Some challenges that you're burning off, as we like to say. And you'll feel like, well, this is happening to me. But in reality, this is a part of your soul's process and how you choose to help your soul and help experience that karma, how you choose to respond to it can make all the difference in the world.
Yeah. So I'm an example that I always use is my relationship with trust in love relationships is a karmic pattern for me this lifetime. Mm-hmm. It has been present in my life since I was a child. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, where does this lack of trust come from? As a child, I did not trust men to be faithful to women. And I didn't believe that it was possible. And so life kept handing me these relationships where the person I was with was not faithful to me. And so I kept having to learn this lesson over and over and over again. And I think, like you said, that's such a great distinction between fate and karma. So many of us think, oh my gosh, what's wrong with me? Why is this happening to me? Mm-hmm. But really... it's a lesson that we're learning. And I got to the point where, you know, things exploded and I had to change. I had to grow. I had to really focus on healing that karmic pattern. And I've done most of that work now, but fascinating that we can, our egos often think it's fate. And I love that you made that distinction.
Yes. Yeah. And that's a great example, by the way, that you give. Absolutely. I would immediately say to a person, whenever I hear someone say, I don't know why this keeps coming up for me. It doesn't matter what I do. This keeps coming back into my life. I immediately go, there's a karmic pattern there. Mm-hmm. There's some kind of soul complex that's trying to be worked out. And the thing to remember, too, is a lot of times when we have these karmic patterns, people will think, and I totally understand, I do this too. It's like, I want to be done with this. I want it to be over. And I can move on and it's gone. But the truth is, these aspects are a part of who we are just as much as they are a part of our soul, truly. And they become your allies. I like to say we turn them from demons into allies, you know? So that issue, for instance, with trust and those relationships with partners, right? For you, as that shifts, it can become a huge ally in your life because you also have a greater understanding now about what it feels like to have the lack of trust.
Exactly. And now I consider trust one of my superpowers. Like, trusting other people. That's,
And I love that.
I think that's one of the big points I want to make, especially about sort of creating your magical life, is that we hit these bumps in the road and we wonder what it's about. And understanding karma is really helpful for that, because then it becomes, like you said, there's an empowering, undertone to it instead of this victim undertone to it.
Yes.
Like, I can do something to change this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you often recognize when you're talking to people and they say, I bump into this situation over and over again, you can see that as karma and a karmic pattern. How do the people listening start to recognize karmic patterns at work in their life?
Well, and that goes back to what we were just talking about, right? So the first thing that I would do, I actually suggested this to someone the other day. I have a group where we work through, called the Karma Casino, right? Where we work through stuff around karma. And sometimes it can be as simple as starting to sit down. And I don't mean, don't sit down and like jot out a couple things. Sit down. You know me, I'm going to say it'd be really great if you meditated first. So that you were nicely grounded and centered and charged as well. And sit and just start going over your life. Take some inventory and start journaling. Stream of consciousness, writing out events in your life, key events, things that really affected you in some way, whether they be positive or negative. Because I want to point out, we're always looking at the negative because we want to work through it. And I understand that. But there's a lot of positive karma, too. Mm. And it's important to remember that that good karma supports you in helping to work through and release the bad karma. Mm. So you want to pay attention to that, too. So you can be sitting there looking through, like, what are the events in my life that have occurred that are a really big deal? It's like a timeline of your life that have really affected me in a positive or negative way, and start to look for those patterns, look for the themes that you see. So for instance, with your trust, right? I can totally relate to that. It's in a different way, but I had total lack of trust in the very world around me. I didn't feel like I had a right to be here. I had no trust in spirit that I had a right to be here, you know? So that is a pattern for me, very much in my life, right? So I might sit and look at the different ways that has played out in relationships. And, of course, I'm coming from a place now of understanding that. If you're looking for it, start to see what are the main themes that I keep seeing again and again. And you'll know, because a lot of times, especially if you don't want to look at it, like you might start to write something down and you'll go, that wasn't a big deal. That didn't matter. But deep down inside, your gut's kind of contracting and cringing. Yeah. Pay attention to that.
Resistance.
Yes.
Yeah, not wanting to go where the dark side is, the shadow.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And write those things down and then start to move through that. Take that through where you're looking at those things and then see if you can begin to distill them down into, for instance, it doesn't have to be three patterns, but I want to give you an easy framework. Start looking to see if you can find three common patterns in your life. Make sure that you've got some negative in there as well as some good, right? Because we don't want to have the resistance, but we also want to know the good that's supporting us. Mm-hmm. And then see if you can distill that down into those core words. So for instance, as we were talking about trust, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can distill it down into that. And then start to go out into your day-to-day life and start looking around and be really open to constantly engaging that. So if you had a person, for instance, who had immense lack of self-worth, so worth is their mantra, right? Worth is the one that has all the energy around it for them. They don't feel worthy. Mm-hmm. Be open to everywhere you go out in your life every day, just playing with. This isn't about you casing and judging on yourself. This is about being open to how you can learn from those karmic patterns. So you want to start looking around. What do I find worthy in my life around me? Mm-hmm. What is worthy of my attention? Mm-hmm. What do I feel holds value in some way, whether that be people or events in your life that mean a lot to you, so they have a lot of value to you, right? They help define who you are, for instance. And you start taking that inward. Then you start going inward. How do I feel about worth? What does that mean to me? So what you're starting to do is bringing mindful awareness to this pattern, mm-hmm. so that you can start to decide how you want to respond to it instead of just reacting to it mindlessly, right? Which is what most of us do.
Exactly. And I love that you mentioned the positive karma as well, because I think, like you said, so many of us focus on the negative. And the positive, it's there to support us. Like when I look back on my life, I think, oh, there's so many situations where I've been safe. Like I could have been in danger, but I always feel like I've had these guardian angels watching over me. And that's a positive karmic pattern, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, so I want to say in many ways, we all have guardian angels watching over us.
Yes,
so
we do.
I don't want people to attribute it to, like, if someone out there is saying, I don't feel like I have any good karma, does that mean no one's watching over me? I want them to realize they do. We all have people watching over, or beings, I should say, watching over us.
Absolutely. And I want to get to that in just a minute. Okay. So it sounds like, I mean, there's a lot we can do to start recognizing our karmic patterns, and certainly people, you know, people go to therapy to deal with all that sort of thing as well, and just like figure out what it is in them, in their personality that is holding them back. So there's a lot that we can do ourselves, but then what do you recommend, or how do you work with your clients on releasing those blocks on an energetic level, right? Because most of us can't consciously remember our previous lives and why we're, you know, having this karmic event. So what about releasing on an energetic level?
Well, that's one of the core ways that I work with people, or how I often say how I'm hardwired mm-hmm. by my guides, right, who I work with. My guides like to get to the root cause of what is generating a pattern for you. So, for instance, so I'll kind of make up an example. I might have someone come to me and they'll say, well, I have issues with money in my business, for instance, right?
Great example.
Right. Yeah. Many of us can relate to this, right? But my guides will come in. And so they're thinking that they want to have a conversation with me about business and money. But my guides will come in, and what they're showing me is that there was a root cause many lifetimes ago with a completely different situation that played out for that person in that lifetime. And I call these karmic siblings. Think of these as your karmic siblings. You're all in this together. You help one another. You're helping your soul ultimately, right? So these other lifetimes you've had are siblings in your constellation of the family, if you will. And there's a karmic sibling in another lifetime that maybe had some immense upheaval happen around, say, a sense of worth. It may or may not have been directly involved money or business, but in whatever way, that pattern got pulled in and crystallized and now is being brought through karmically. And then all the other lifetimes that in some way may have, by the way, the soul chose to deal with that issue, right? Mm-hmm. In the lifetimes where it chose to be dealing with that issue, you've got those onion layers that build up with each lifetime because of those egos, right? The wild cards that come into play. Mm-hmm. And so now for this person, they're experiencing maybe a lack of worth or issue around how it, because it can play out differently for everybody, right? We're all very complex beings. But so for them, it's playing out in this realm of business and money, for instance. But I'll be saying to them, well, we need to go here karmically. We need to go way back into when this event happened. And usually for me, my guides kind of, especially in readings with people, they will nod to all the information. They'll kind of tell me where I need to go, but especially if it's particularly challenging, or I would say there's a lot of shadow work around it, like really heavy stuff, they will wait until I'm in sacred space doing my shamanic process before they will lead me into the lifetime and actually show me all the information. Hmm. And that's when I go in and I shift from there energetically. We get to the root cause of the actual event of where the energy first began getting tangled or held up. And we shift it from that place. And I've seen people have amazing changes from that.
Okay. So let me just clarify what you're saying, because on an energetic level, your guides show you which lifetime cause the problem, and then energetically you are able to go to that place and start clearing that energy so that it has this like ramification ripple effect in the current lifetime. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. And okay. I'd make a distinction because so many people use the word clearing now. Mm-hmm. It's kind of become the buzzword in energy work. And I want to make the distinction because a lot of people, when they hear clearing, they think, it's gone. I'm free.
Right.
Over with. And again, there is still that dynamic within you. It's part of who you are and a lesson that now serves you and helps you. So I tend to think of it more as purification in that we're transforming the energy. So it's not that suddenly it has all disappeared. It's that the energy has literally been transformed so that now it serves you.
Ah, interesting. Okay. And then as the person in this lifetime, the ego, the personality deals with this, they can notice some shifts and there is no magic bullet, right? So as things are shifting, they still have to deal with the issue, but it's just in a different way. It sounds like you're saying, like, they notice things change. They're able to then react differently.
It's a choice, right? It's a personal choice in many ways. And that's one of the reasons why, because I do, for instance, like one-off readings or shamanic sessions as needed for people. But the freedom sessions is where we really focus in. And we're not only doing the shamanic sessions where there's all the woo, right? All the energetic work and transformation that's happening. But there's also the mindset work and working with ego. And that's really, really important to me because it's often a factor that I see missing in energetic healing for people. As you know, you have to deal with the ego. You've got to get ego on board.
Absolutely.
I am not about bashing the ego. There's a lot of many spiritual paths, in fact, and many different teachers and gurus and whatnot. And they're all like, you got to get rid of ego. And I think... how? You can't get rid of ego. It's a functional part of us. So let's get ego on board and work together with it, right? So yeah, that's a huge part of it, is helping ego to see as well the benefit of that shift.
And I think also, we have a lot of different ways we use the word ego in our culture too. So some people think it's like having a big ego and being an egomaniac and all that sort of thing. So again, I want to say, you're talking specifically about the human personality, the way we show up in this world, in this lifetime, with our quirks and our foibles. Okay. So a couple things. You said your freedom sessions. I just want to mention that is a 3-month one-on-one program that you offer that you work with your clients through. And again, you can find more information at unshakablesoul.com if you're interested in that. And you've also been talking about a couple of things that I want to get into. One is you're a shamanic practitioner. Will you define that for us, please?
Sure. This is where I'm laughing when I think of that, because people are always talking about that. And there's so many different opinions about what that means now. And I've seen it really change in recent decades, literally over decades, you see it changing. So if we're really going to distill this down into what a shaman is, if you will, and I always want to preface anything we're talking about here. This is my perspective and opinion based on my learning, my experiences, what guides have told me, but I am not someone who is big about the one true way and I know the truth and all of that, right?
Great.
I always like to preface that.
So that's great. Thank you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The core of shamanism, we were going to try and very simply define it, is this is someone who's usually had some kind of life-altering experience, like a near-death experience or a very intense, extremely challenging situation that has initiated them in some way. And it is believed, and I believe this very strongly, that they are chosen. This isn't something that you, because I get a lot of people who come to me going, I want to be a shaman. And the minute I hear that, I go, oh, that's not how it works.
Right. But there are a lot of classes, like become a shamanic practitioner. I mean, that's everywhere. You see it everywhere.
I know. And I have a hard time with that because, there's something to be said, absolutely, because I'm all about self-empowerment, as you know, for working with what you can to help you through life, honestly, right? I mean, that's so much of what I'm doing, is helping people to learn these tools so they can empower themselves. The caution I would say with shamanism, this goes back to the definition, is that this is a person who has an inherent ability, a gift, to go into altered states readily and be able to travel in the different worlds, because there are many different worlds or planes of reality, if you will. And they can do this quite easily and affect transformation and healing on behalf of others. Mm-hmm. It's a very, for instance, you may have heard this before, and I was definitely taught this, that you never call yourself a shaman. It is considered extremely bad luck to call yourself a shaman.
Yes, I have heard that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like you are challenging the gods to test you. And whether you're a shaman or not, never challenge the gods. That's what I would say. Just don't do it. It's just not worth it in the end, right? But so I often tell people, you know, I consider myself a shamanic practitioner, but I would never call myself a shaman. That is something for your village, or these days in modern times, we would say your clients or those you help in any way, friends and family, whoever it may be, because some have beliefs around not working with close friends and family, by the way. So that's a name that is bestowed on you. That's considered a gift. And you always want to very carefully handle that gift, you know, and be humble with it. So
now, is there training? But there is training in specific fields of shamanism.
Yeah. And you do. Some people will say shaman. Mostly I do hear shamanism. But yes, there are. There's quite a few. And the ones that really worry me the most, honestly, are the, for instance, be a shamanic practitioner or healer, or be a shaman in, you know, 1 week of training for $5,000, that kind
of
a thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Really disconcerting to me. Most of the, what I would say, you know, the good trainers who understand the pitfalls of this path, quite honestly, because it is a very difficult path. This is why I'm saying it's not something you wake up and say, I want to do this, because if you really knew what this path entailed, most people would run screaming the other way. I mean, most people who are on the path, including myself, ran screaming the other way for mm-hmm. many years mm-hmm. because it's very intense and you're constantly challenged by spirits. So when you look at those classes that people are doing, I just caution people that you really want to find someone who is known, who has a good reputation and history, and that they're not constantly spouting all the buzzwords and making you all kinds of crazy promises, because you can learn how to do shamanic practices, absolutely, to self-empower yourself. The area where it gets a little bit, where I get concerned, is shamanism by its nature is about serving to help others, mm-hmm. right? And when we start doing it for ourselves all the time, it's really, really easy to believe our own hype with our ego. Right? Mm,
yes. That is, yes. I think that's
the hard part of it.
In all of the spiritual world, there are people with a lot of hype. And we talked a little bit about this a couple weeks ago too, like how you find a practitioner of any kind, whether it's a shamanic practitioner or a energy worker or whatever it is, that has integrity that you can trust, because it can put you in a very vulnerable place with someone else.
Yes.
And so absolutely. It's really important. You know, we talked about trusting your gut, going off recommendations, talking to them beforehand,
yep.
you know, all those things. So it's interesting. Okay. Cause I had it in my head that, that in order to call yourself a shamanic practitioner, there was a more sort of traditional sort of Carlos Castaneda style, training involved. But it sounds like that's not quite what it is in this day and age.
Oh, boy. See, again, I mean, this is a loaded topic, I got to tell you. I mean, I've had many, many conversations over the years because, again, it's shifting and changing so much. Carlos Castaneda, that whole story in and of itself has many people up in arms pulling that story apart because some people consider it fiction. Some people do not, right? So, and I won't speak to that because that's a can of worms right there.
Right. But, I only mention him because I think it's sort of, if you're of a certain age in this
yes,
world,
absolutely.
You've probably read or at least heard of him and his,
yes,
and his story.
For sure. Oh yeah. So, and the important thing to remember is shamanism is the oldest known, many people will call it a spirituality. You can move into then considering it a religion. I personally do not consider it like a religion, but it is definitely a spiritual way of being or experiencing or living your life that cultures embrace. Now, that goes to say that they had beliefs around healing and spiritual tenets, if you will, but there was usually the shaman or a few shamans of a village, for instance, right? Mm-hmm. But this has been known all around the world. This is considered the oldest form of transformational healing that is known, right? So it's been around a really, really long time. Now, what that also means is we need to realize and understand, and this is to me where it's like the reality check of there's no one culture that owns shamanism, right? There are variations all around the world. It might be called something different in every culture. Even the term shaman comes from Siberia. It is not a term, it is now, but it was not originally this one term that everyone all around the world used. As you know, cultures don't work that way, right?
Right.
So it's morphed over time, if you will. But yeah, it's a complex and dynamic thing. Even for myself, you know, part of why I fought the calling for so long years ago was because I grew up during the era when it was all about the indigenous peoples of North America, right? The medicine men and women of North America. It was really big in the 70s and 80s, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what I grew up around. And even though there are stories that I have a great-great-grandmother that is Native American, which I'm still researching, she's very elusive, so we're trying to find her in documents and whatnot. But I didn't want to appropriate that culture. And so for me, it was very, very scary of like how, you know, and guidance and deities are telling me, this is what you do. And I'm going, no, but I don't look like that. Right.
Right. Yes.
And it took me a long time to realize, and in part in some of my training. So for instance, I have a lot of influence from different shamanic backgrounds, Native American, Celtic, Kuna from Hawaii. So, Eastern Indian, all these different influences coming in. And eventually what I had to do is accept that if I didn't answer the calling, I was essentially slapping the spirits in the face of the gift.
Right.
Right.
So, and this brings me to a point where there are definitely people who have really strong callings for this.
Yes.
Really strong, like you. Clearly, your whole entire life has been about this, either avoiding it or learning about it.
And then finding my way. Ultimately,
exactly.
Finding my way of how I was going to do it.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. But I also want to say, too, that I think that all of us have the ability to be intuitive, to be open to those nudges, the communication from spirit. Like you said, we all have our team helping us out. And I want to talk about that because you've been talking about working with your guides. And I know that's something that you do really, really closely and have for a long time. So can you tell us who are spirit guides?
So, you know, again, I make certain distinctions, right? So soul guides, what I call proper soul guides, and I go into this in my course, Your Soul Tribe. Proper soul guides are non-corporeal beings. They are not manifesting the physical world right now. They are on the other side. They, in whatever understanding that you may have with your soul or they may have with your soul, they have agreed to support you and help you through the lifetimes that you manifest. So you may have a proper soul guide on the other side who's known you, or again, I should say your soul, really, for many, many lifetimes, right? You may have a proper soul guide who, for instance, comes together to help you with a certain lifetime. For instance, I've had situations where a guide has made it clear, this person's working on these specific challenges this lifetime around, and I have a fellow guide who really knows a lot about that and would like to support them. And that was the decision made that they would come through and help support them. So you might have situations like that.
So that means that you could have one soul guide, you could have multiple soul guides, you could have, is that what you're saying?
Well, usually you do have multiple,
okay.
I will say. Usually you have more. A lot of times people will connect mainly with one. And that is usually the main one that really walks beside them, if you will, right, through life. But you do often have many that may serve in different ways, right? So there's also, for instance, what is often called, old school is called the gatekeeper. We call it the guardian as well. And they're more concerned with literally protecting you, your life force, and helping you to discern danger. Your main soul guide might not be as concerned about that because it, much like a parent, when you're helping your child to walk, you know, the soul guide's going to stand there and say, yep, you're going to keep falling down. Go ahead and keep trying and you've got to learn, right?
Right.
the guardian might say, you know, watch out, there's concrete floor coming up. You know, so there's a little bit of a difference there. But then you do have, and I find this to be more rare than people might realize, but I have had situations, for instance, one client, and I always think so fondly of this guide because he was really, really neat. He was a very dear friend of hers in life, and then he passed away.
Mm.
And he was, so this is an interesting distinction, by the way, with mediumship. He started coming through, I think in like our very first session together, I was like, who is this guy coming through? And he came through very much like a spirit, as you would experience as a medium, where you're experiencing the spirit of someone who's passed.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the energy around him, more and more, it became very clear that his energy was very much like a guide. And he made clear to me that as he had passed over, he was moving strongly into a role of being her guide. So you do have situations like that that can be a little bit different. You know, there's many different types of guides. And again, what I just talked about there were what I would call proper guides, but you have many other kinds of guides. Many other kinds.
So what kind of guidance do guides offer? Because I think this is a really important, people often want to know this, like, how do I connect with my guides and what kind of guidance do they offer? So let's start with the kind of guidance.
The kind of guidance, really, it depends on the person in so many ways. In terms of what it is that you need, it has to do with your karmic patterns, right? So for instance, you might have a guide. My guides are very hard on me. For example, and the more I do my work and the longer I am on my path, the more they expect me to step up. And I will turn to them sometimes and say, well, what is this? What do you think? And they will sit back and say, what do you think?
Right.
What do you think this is? Because they want me to grow and learn. You have other people I know who guides come through and they're totally holding them with kid gloves and helping them with every little, like, oh, we'll try and do this, we'll try and do that. And so you have guides that also are really interacting based on what you need, really. So think about what you need, and that goes back into looking as well at your karmic patterns, because we're talking about on the soul level, what you really need to learn. They're going to meet you in that place. They're not just going to, you know, if you have a person who's like, you know, their guides are telling them every single little thing in terms of they can't make any tiny decision without checking with their guides, and it's very ego-based type stuff, like my guides are telling me it's okay for me to, you know, cheat on my husband or whatever it
might
be,
right,
you know
yes.
what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You want to question that.
Mm-hmm.
Deeply question that, because it may be your ego is stepping in and giving you a sense that you think you're working with the guide.
Right.
You know?
Well, that's, I'm so glad you brought that up, because I wanted to go back to, you said your guides are really hard on you, which mm-hmm. I want to be specific that they don't, it's not hard on you like a mean teacher would be. It's hard on you like, I love you and I need
yes.
you to fall down and figure this out for yourself.
Yes. So, and thank you for making that distinction, because yes, it is. Yes, it comes from a very, very loving but firm place.
And also, yeah. to be really clear, too, that they will, a true guide will never tell you to do something that will harm anyone else.
No.
Or that is not in service of everyone's highest good.
You right. know, absolutely.
It's very much a loving, empowering relationship. So I love that you brought up the, like, my guide said it was okay for me to cheat on my husband, because I think that there's this, oh my gosh, I mean, I feel like I've seen it on television recently where someone was saying, oh, well, I have to check in with my guides. Well, they say I can eat this for lunch. Like, that's not what we're talking about here.
Right. And that's not to say, let's also, you know, again, these things are complex, right? That's not to say that you might not have support for some very challenging situations in your life.
Yes.
A lot of people think this means that we have to be, especially if we're being compassionate and good and kind, that we're perfect and we do no wrong and we would never, ever say, yell at a person or harm them. And sometimes that's out of your control. Sometimes what is best for you may hurt another person, quite honestly. But the difference is, it's not that you're consciously going out of your way to hurt them. You know,
mm-hmm.
You know, in the case of cheating, for instance, if you're in a situation where that's arising in your life, then it's worth seriously looking at, why am I with this person?
Mm-hmm.
And if guidance is urging you towards another person, then what would be the most honest and right thing to do, right? How do you keep that in right relationship? If you're feeling that movement in some way, well, then you close this relationship and you move on. right? And guidance would be supporting that, because life is complex. Life is really messy, you know, really messy. But yes, they are always supporting the highest good, always. It's just sometimes what that looks like may challenge you.
Yes.
You know?
So how can, if someone's interested in communicating with their guides and they don't know how to start, and I know you do offer a class on this, which I highly recommend, but just one or two things right now that people can do to open up that space for communication.
The first thing that I'm going to say about that is, and this is really, really huge, so everybody, if you're listening, put your phone down. Put the phone down, turn it off, sit and be with yourself, be with your body, because this is one of the biggest things that I'm sure this won't surprise you or anyone listening, right? We're all living in this time of immense distraction right now, immense distraction. I struggle with this myself all the time, and I try to be very, very mindful of how I use my phone, how I am online, because it really interferes with your ability to connect. And the reason being is we are constantly training ourselves, especially our children, I want to point out, to look for external gratification and validation all the time, right? With what we see and what we're doing and liking and all that stuff, right? And it's fun and it's exciting, but especially if you want to tune in with guidance, you need to be willing to go inward and be very still and listen to your body first and foremost. That's really where it begins. And all of that external distraction can keep you from being able to do that. So it's kind of like some people I'm noticing, it's not like this for everyone, but I am noticing some people have to actually work a little harder right now than I've seen in recent years, because there's so much noise in the technological world around us. So listening to your body is the very, very first step. And it can start with just paying attention to literally the feelings and sensations you're having in your body, because your body is the gateway to the energetic and to the awareness of soul. It is the absolute gateway. Okay. So you have to listen to it.
I have to stop you here for a second, because I think this is a little bit mind-blowing for people who always think that the spiritual world is like leaving your body, woo-woo, out there, heady. And what you're saying is the exact opposite, and I love that you're saying it, because it's so true. We have to exist in our bodies order to be able to have the strength and the groundedness to connect out.
Absolutely. And anyone who works with me knows, there's people who will be listening, they'll be laughing. Yes, I am really, really, really big on this. Mm-hmm. Your body is a conduit. Mm-hmm. You need to anchor and engage in the body so that all that fabulous, woo, etheric energy way up there in the ethers, right, can come down through this amazing channel of your body and express itself and be known. So if you're not anchored and you're not in your body, that energy is all over the place. It's got nowhere to go. It's very much like an electrical circuit, right? You have to plug it in.
Yeah. And I think, you know, so many people say, oh, I was doing some energy work, I got really dizzy, or I was, you know, we have physical symptoms of that. And I also think it manifests in people being really ungrounded in their lives, like people that you cannot trust to follow through on their word, or, you know, whatever it is, being grounded in our bodies is so important. I love that that was your first point.
It is. Yeah.
One other tip or practice for connecting, opening the space for connection.
One that I will say, and I go over this, you know, again, as we were talking about, right, in the course, I really go into this, but this is something I really want to put out there for anybody who wants to open up and start engaging with calling on their guides, right, and calling them forth, because you're opening up a vast world. If you're approaching this like, well, it's for fun and I'm going to open the door, fair enough. But the reality is there are many other realms out there, and there are a lot of other beings out there than just our guides and just us, right? Mm-hmm. So the other thing that I would say that's very important is if you open up to that and you ask for a guide to come through, and whatever steps forward, whatever being or any sensation that you experience and it's conveying themselves is there to support you, you always want to verify them. Always, 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 always. This is huge. Mm-hmm. You want to stop before you engage and in any way engage your energy with them, and you stop and you ask them some version of, are you here to support my highest potential and the good of all? and they must respond. This is a universal law. And I have people ask me, why? Why is it a law? What if they don't? And the only thing I can tell you is in all my years of doing this, they always answer. Mm-hmm. If they are truly your guide for your highest good, they will answer yes with absolutely no hesitation. Because if they are for your highest good, they have no reason to not say yes, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. No reason at all. Mm-hmm. If you're encountering a being in any way that isn't responding or is just nodding its head, you ask them to leave. You demand that they leave your space immediately so that you're calling on a being that is engaging with you on the level that you want. You want a being that is there to support the highest good of all, not just you, by the way, but of all beings, right?
Yes.
Really important.
So important. And I think another thing that you just said, and I'm gonna say it in a different way so that people really hear it, is that mm-hmm. if you are choosing to engage with this world, you have the power to send to say no and to,
yes.
to keep yourself safe and to send energy away. You do not have to accept it. And if you feel afraid or unsure, then just close the gates, you know, surround yourself in white light or yes. say go away or whatever it is. But you have the power. There is no reason to be afraid in that sense.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Really important. Thank you for mentioning
Very important.
That.
Very important.
I also wanted to say, sometimes I know I've had clients where they've gotten they want to communicate more, but they don't really know how. And so one of the ways that is often recommended is to look for signs or to ask for signs if you can't sort of open the direct communication. And it was so funny this morning before our interview, I went out to the beach and sat down to meditate and call on my spiritual team and I looked down beside me and there was a white feather stuck to a plant on the beach. And I just laughed because I thought, you know what, this is so perfect. I didn't ask for a sign, but that's something that I consider a sign from the angelic realm. Uh-huh. And I was thinking, you know, when we talk about having a magical life, so much of it is about choice. And you can go through your life thinking, excuse me, oh, there's this feather, a bird lost a feather. Or you can go through your life thinking, this is a sign that the universe loves and supports me. Well, either is perfectly acceptable, but which one brings you more joy?
Exactly.
I know which one brings me more joy.
Yeah, no, I totally agree.
Yeah.
People will say to me, well, what if it's not real? Or what if I'm making it up? And ultimately, because of course, you know, I don't think that's what it is, but I say to them, that's just the ego trying to get a hold of the game. And I say, trump ego, look right at ego and go, well, yeah, what if? This is what I choose and this is what works for me. And if it's just as you're saying, if it's supporting you and helping you to have a life that is reaching your highest potential and the good of all, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why would you not want to engage that more?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
And I agree. Looking for signs. Absolutely. And that's the thing. Part of the reason why I've started having people try some different things like moving into the body more mm-hmm. is because of that external feature, as I was saying to you. Because what I found is some people get so obsessed with looking for signs that they think they're seeing a sign in absolutely everything all around them.
Right, right.
And that's defeating the purpose. You want to look yes. for something, like your example is a perfect one, something that may be slightly unusual, but is very auspicious in some way, right? Or very synchronistic. Mm-hmm. So when you're looking for those signs, be open to the unusual mm-hmm. in some way. You know, for instance, I had a situation, this is years ago, and I still get chills whenever I think about it, because in our old house, we had this one, it was the west side of the house, and there were all these windows along the dining room and led right into the galley kitchen with all these windows, right? And there was this little, I found out later that it was a goldfinch. I didn't know what it was at the time, but this beautiful little finch that was coming up to the window. Every time I would walk into the dining room and kitchen, this bird would show up.
Hmm.
And as you know, I work a lot with bird medicine, right? So right away I was like, this is interesting, because it kept pecking on the window like it was trying to get my attention. And it would follow me along the windows. And this went on for days. And finally I started going, clearly spirit is trying to tell me something. But what ended up happening was I had an immense, huge energetic and spiritual breakthrough at that time.
Hmm.
And as I began working with Finch, I realized this is so much of what the energy around the Finch bird is bringing higher levels of consciousness. So that is something where it wasn't unusual to see birds at my window, but it was unusual to see a bird of an unusual type and color that was constantly pecking and literally looking at me, following me.
Following you. That's amazing.
Right? Yeah. And that, so that's an example of where when something like that happens to you, stop and pay attention to it and get in your body, right? Stop and go, woo, what am I feeling right now while this is happening?
Uh-huh.
What's happening in my body? Am I feeling a contraction? Like, I don't know how to deal with this. Am I feeling an expansion? Like, oh, wow, I really want to embrace this. All of that's really important information to help your intuition grow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think that those words that you just said are vitally important to help your intuition grow. That is the whole point of this, because the more in touch we are with our intuition, it goes back to what you said about understanding our karma, is that we are then empowered. We have more control over our lives. We understand that we are not victims, and we can look for the magic, look for the beauty, even in the hard moments, even in the bumps and the bruises.
Yes.
And that's what all of this is feeding towards, is that sense of being an empowered creator in your life and not just a victim.
Mm-hmm.
Of fate.
Being able to navigate it in right relationship with everything around you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? And that has, I'm a big proponent. This has just as much to do with how you're willing to embrace the shadows in that aspect. You know, those challenges that come up in your life. Do you stop and say, and believe me, I've been there so many times, right? The challenges that come up and you just crumple to the floor, whether it be physically or internally, and you're just like, I don't want to do this, you know? But spirit's trying to help you grow. You're trying to learn something here. So how do you respond to that in those challenging moments, no matter how dark or scary they might be? And it can be very helpful if you have been working on building your intuition and being in touch and really understanding your karmic patterns and understanding the story of your soul, that soul awareness coming through. Then when those moments happen, you don't have to crumple to the floor. You can stand there and say, okay, what am I going to do now? How would I like to respond to this moment that's happening? Because I understand the dynamics of why it's happening to me.
Or if you do crumple to the floor, you can have your moment of crumpling
then
be able to find your way to those thoughts. Exactly.
How do you get back up, right? Mm-hmm. It's all in how you get back up.
Yeah.
Always. In that,
beautiful. Oh, I love talking with you about this stuff. We could talk about it for days. Thank you so much, Kimberly, for being here.
I love talking with you. It's good to hear your voice again.
Okay, so now that you have a better understanding of karma and you're going to start looking at your patterns and the patterns in your life, wondering which of them might have karmic beginnings, I want you to remember three things. The first is that this is not an excuse to beat yourself up. You haven't done anything wrong. You're not doing anything wrong. This is like a big, big growth point for you. The second thing I want you to remember is that you're exactly where you need to be learning exactly what you need to learn for your soul's growth. Okay? Kindness. Remember to treat yourself with kindness. And the third thing I want you to remember is that these struggles and challenges are growth points. And as you move through them and work through them, they can become your superpowers, the things that you do best. They give you wisdom and insight into other people, and they really can become a strength for you. So the more you can meet these life challenges and these difficult patterns with an open heart and treat yourself kindly and just trust that if you keep following your intuition and learning and growing, you will move through them, the easier they get. That's not to say they're going to be easy, but the less we struggle against them, the less we fight them, the more we can open up and experience moments of joy or moments of happiness or moments of understanding and clarity within them. So take a deep breath right now and see if you can find that feeling where no matter how challenging this moment is or today is or this period of your life is, you can believe, even just for this moment, even just for a second or two, that everything is okay, that there's a grand plan and that everything is going to be okay. Because it is. Even if it doesn't feel like it.
All right. You've been listening to Create Your Magical Life. I'm your host, Alana Sheeran, reminding you that your magical life is within reach. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.